Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron.
And this is Trey, Tony Tenekio.
And we have a...
That we are.
Well, it's nice that they tell you when there's a problem now. Connected. All right. So we got a big show. We got a couple guests on tonight. We got a couple 15-minute interviews with Willie Gates and Alex Reyes. Willie Gates is a UFC fighter. Alex Reyes is from King of the Cage. He's actually their lightweight champion. So we're going to chat with him. Willie's the first one at 9:15, and then Alex we're going to talk to at 9:30. Willie is 12-5 and 1-1 in the UFC, 12-5 overall, of course. And Alex is 11-2 with all 11 wins coming in a row after the first two fights of his career were losses. So he's obviously doing something right, and learned early on how to overcome those losses. It's pretty good stuff. We will get back to boxing next week, I promise to him.
Okay.
More boxing guests. We'll definitely work on that. We got some pretty interesting stories this week. Just yesterday, we had a pretty big one break. Tom sent me a link even after I heard about it, but Stitchgate, I'm going to call it. Because Jacob Stitch Duran, this is a boxing and MMA story technically because he does boxing. Stitch Duran got fired by the UFC after complaining about the lack of sponsors that he can have now and the fact that his salary from the UFC was basically garbage. Quote, that's a quote, garbage. So, all right, well, we'll take that salary right away from you.
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously some fighters are pissed because they liked working with him. Not only did he do the cuts, but he also wrapped hands. A lot of people don't know that. He wraps everybody's hands, and he asked them famously, you know, would you like the grappling wrap or the knockout wrap? And so, you know, depending on what your preference is, obviously it's self-explanatory there, but it's pretty unbelievable to me that they would go to that length to silence criticism, to the point where Reebok came out and said, you know, hey, we don't have anything to do with pressuring the UFC to do this, basically in their statement. And we have Psychic Tom with us. How's it going, Tom?
All right. Yeah, that's, I'm surprised they didn't fire every fighter that commented on Twitter about it. They had a whole big line of them, and I'm surprised they just didn't fire all of them, get rid of them. Unbelievable. Hey, Tony, I've been waiting a few days to ask you about South Philadelphia. There was a fighter coming up this weekend from Philly, Paul Felder. And he's an Irish kid, grew up in Philadelphia, and he said he started off in karate and kickboxing and stuff and wound up in the UFC. But he said he likes to be a technical fighter, but the minute he gets hit, the South Philly comes out at him. Okay? Now, is that one of the tougher parts of town?
Well, you know what? It's funny because everybody thinks I'm from South Philly when they see me, because I'm an Italian kid. You think of the Italian market and all that, and they always think I'm actually a South Philadelphia resident, which is not true. I never lived in South Philadelphia. I grew up outside of the North Philadelphia suburbs. And what's funny is I was always announced from South Philly because that's where I trained out of. With Philadelphia, you have a lot of neighborhoods. And I'm not going to say any neighborhood is tougher or rougher than the other one. We had some good, tough South Philly gyms. My gym, Marian Anderson Rec Center, we put out guys like Rogers Matagua, Willie Gibbs, guys that trained out of there. Burt Cooper stopped in there to train a few times. Gerald the Jedi Nobles boxed out of there. Good fighters, tough fighters. You had a couple gyms in North Philadelphia. Obviously, Frazier's gym comes to mind, North Philadelphia. You had the Harrogate Boxing Center. Also, in like Southwest Philly, you had some, you know, tough, rough gyms. But it's funny, you know, you go to like you go to a fight card, like a local fight card in Philadelphia, similar to the one we went to that time, and especially more prevalent when they were having shows at the Blue Horizon, or now it's called the 2300 Arena in South Philadelphia. But you'll get like neighborhood factions down there. Like the one time, it's like, hey, this fight, we got two guys. We got a North Philly and we got a South Philly. And you'll see like all the North Philly fans will be on one side of the ring and all the South Philly fans will be on the other side. And they're trying to out-shout each other, basically. So I don't want to come out there and say the South Philly is, you know, tougher or rougher than any of the guys out of North Philly or West Philly, Southwest Philly, Northeast Philly. But hey, us South Philly boys, we can hold our own. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I kind of thought, you know, maybe it was like a hometown, you know, the guy's building up his part of town, and that's natural and that's cool. Nothing wrong with that at all. But I just, because I was kind of thinking you'd say that, because there's tough guys from everywhere in that city, you know, all four corners.
And you know what, see, a lot of times I think what gives South Philly and I don't want to say a reputation, but I want to say people will say South Philly more than any other part. I mean, you will hear North Philly from time to time because that's where, like, Bernard Hopkins came from and the Frazier Gym. They were all out of North Philadelphia. But for other people, especially people that are kind of generalizing the city altogether, South Philly is the popular one to say because South Philly is where all the sports complexes are, the Phillies, the Eagles, the Flyers, the Sixers. South Philly is where the Italian market is, so a lot of people get the Rocky mentality in there, thinking South Philly because of, you know, Rocky running down the Italian market. So that's, I think that's why a lot of times South Philadelphia almost gets, like, romanticized.
Yeah.
But actually,
well,
if you get back, Rocky actually was out of Kensington, PA, because that's where Mighty Mix was in Kensington.
Every time I hear South Philadelphia, I think of the Fresh Prince anthem there. Theme song.
That was West Philadelphia.
Born and raised. I thought it was South.
No. West Philadelphia, born and raised. The playground spent most of my days.
Well, there you go. Correcting me.
Okay. Yep.
Well, I guess I'm wrong. Anyway, getting back to Duran. Thanks, Tom, for changing the subject. You had
Sorry
some
about
comments.
That. I've been waiting a couple of days for him, you know, so.
Okay. I won't fire you.
Okay. Thank you.
Jake Duran, Jacob Duran, otherwise known as Stitch, which I could never figure out, you know, because he doesn't stitch people up, really. You know, especially when he's on camera. He's actually, you know, he might stitch people up backstage afterwards, but you know, he calls himself Stitch. Obviously, he's a cut man. I never really liked him. I sent this to Tom earlier. It's just because of the Zion's connection. And not only was he connected at the beginning, before all the shit came out, but, you know, he obviously had read my stuff. I emailed him at one point to say, hey, you know, you're basically legitimizing a corrupt company, by the way. You and all your cut men are wearing the Zion stuff, even after the Fertittas swindled it out of the investors. And he was an investor. He had 10,000 shares in the company that got taken out from under him. And they still paid him once the Fertittas took over. He was like the only one that was sponsored at that point at one time. It was like all the fighters had been stiffed, so they never came back. And then all of a sudden, there's Stitch again. And he ended up having all the cut men in Zion's gear. So I never liked that about him, but, you know, I can't say anything about the way he does his job, which is, if you're going to get fired, you know, that should be why, that you don't do your job well. But just going out there and criticizing the Reebok deal, just like any other fighter has in the past, and I don't think he said anything harsher than any other fighter has said, just does not give you an excuse to fire a guy. I think he actually has a case for a wrongful termination suit, if he really wanted to push it. But I think he'll just go away quietly and, you know, kind of sit back and smile at all the backlash coming at the UFC for this.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he'll be hurting for work because, like you mentioned, he could go to Bellator. And in boxing, he's always been active in boxing for a long time. So I think he'll have plenty of work.
Yeah, speaking of boxing, this article basically concludes that, I don't know if it's been officially announced yet, maybe I'm out of the loop, but this article concludes that he's actually working Andre Berto's corner for the Floyd Mayweather fight. So they're basically saying that's going to be the fight. I know that it was narrowed down to Kareem Mayfield or Berto, but I guess.
Why can't it be Mayweather versus Berto and Kareem Mayfield?
They're going to have to combine forces to beat him with those two. But anyway, Stitch came out, and I don't know who he talked to, but I got an article here about some comments he made. He said, "I basically became the spokesman for the fighters in coming forward. I didn't expect to get canned right on the spot. With other organizations, they usually just say, hey, don't be doing that. I didn't get that opportunity at all. I had to speak up for the team. That was really my only intention." Actually, it wasn't for the fighters he was speaking up. He was speaking up for all the cut men, actually. So I didn't expect this firestorm from the fans. He also said, people are talking about boycotting and canceling their Fight Pass subscriptions. I don't think the UFC ever expected to get financially hit by this, but you have to listen to the fans. You have to listen to the people without having any malice. And basically his comments, he said, it demonstrates what everybody has been thinking, but everybody was scared to say something. And he also added a little bit of a dig at Dana White. He says, uses his wife's feeling. He says, my wife was just saying this morning that for as loud and outgoing as Dana is, it's surprising how quiet he is right now. That was really disappointing to me. He's the one who brought me in. I think I would have respected this whole thing a lot more than the way it was handled. I'm disappointed that it wasn't Dana who made the call. But he added, listen, I'm the kind of guy that has no hard feelings. I understand your position, but I can help your position. If Dana would sit down and not be so egotistical and look what I brought to the table during that interview, those are the things that fans and fighters are talking about. So definitely a big story. Definitely a lot of backlash is going to come from this. And, you know, fighters, when they get used to working with people, they don't want to work with anybody else. So this is going to have a ripple effect where a lot of these fighters are going to say, you know, when does it stop? You know, who's making these stupid moves is my question. I mean, who really thinks this is going to help in the Zuffa offices when you've already got a situation where everybody in the media is blasting this Reebok deal? So the media is already turned against you. You've got guys like Josh Koscheck going over to Bellator and saying, hey, when your contract ends up, fighters in the UFC, leave. You know, that's the way to handle the Reebok deal. And I think that's going to happen. You're going to see Jose Aldo probably first. If he doesn't get his title, full title back, and they'll have him locked down on his contract because he has a title. That's one of those things in the antitrust suit that they didn't like. They've got a title clause so that you have to stay in the UFC if you're a title holder. But, you know, if Jose Aldo's contract runs out and they don't renew it, he's going to Bellator. Guaranteed. He's actually threatened to sue the UFC. That's another story I've got for later. But it's just a bad PR move, too, because, you know, this is just great stuff for any journalist to jump all over. Because you can, you know, just about every fight where Stitch has been, he's done something or been a part of something that is helping the fighter's safety, number one. And number two, allowing fighters to keep fighting who are easily cut. Look at the case of Robbie Lawler and Rory McDonald. They keep mentioning that Stitch was the one who made sure that fight could continue into the fifth round because he was working on Rory. Where I had some pretty vicious cuts that Stitch was able to deal with. Even though at one point it got so bad that after the round ended, the next round started and Rory had stood up and like 30 seconds later, all his entire shorts were covered with blood. But I think that was the fifth round. So Stitch was doing pretty good up until then. But anyway, it's just unfortunate that they're going to make that stand against free speech and can this guy, who's had such a good history with the organization. He says one bad thing and they throw him out. Anthony Johnson is one of the ones that came forward and tweeted about it. A lot of fighters have tweeted about this. So Anthony's comment was, so we the fighters are asked out because Stitch Duran spoke his mind. That sentiment was also echoed by former lightweight champ Benson Henderson. He said, dang, Stitch Duran, big ups for your bravery in speaking your mind. Sorry to hear about how it all played out. So, you know, that's just a couple of comments. I think we're going to see this story kind of gain momentum and end up becoming bigger than it is even right now. It's not just a cut man either. You know, this is a guy that's basically made a name for himself from nothing. You know, he's a role model for a lot of people. You know, he's literally like picking lettuce on a farm and worked out of that situation to become, you know, kind of a pseudo superstar here in a sport that he loves. And he's not leaving MMA, he said. He's definitely going to stick around. But he's going to take a week to think about things and see where it goes. But he's also the official cut man for Vladimir Klitschko, so that should tell you something. Heavyweight champion of the world, trust him, in boxing. Anyway, speaking of Jose Aldo, as I mentioned, I had another story about him. He is pretty pissed about this whole rib situation, where not only the UFC has come out and claimed that it's probably a fake injury. You know, they didn't really say fake, but they claim that it wasn't broken, his rib. Of course, Chael Sonnen is not one to pull any punches. He had some stuff to say about it and questioned the injury. So he came on his podcast and talked about how he got a phone call from a lawyer that claimed to be Jose Aldo's lawyer. And this is a exact quote from Chael. He says, I get a phone call, so I answer it on the car speaker. It's a lawyer from Brazil threatening to sue me for defamation. Her client, Jose Aldo. They said, we won't sue you if you stop talking about it. I said, hold on, I'll go a step further than that. If I said it and it's not true, I'll give them an apology. I don't want to go around saying that the guy put out two x-rays if that's not true, but I'm a little confused here. I parroted this information. I heard it and repeated it. So where did the story come from? I heard this at a UFC press conference. The attorney said, yeah, well, pay attention in the next few days. You won't hear the UFC saying it anymore because before we called and threatened you with a lawsuit, we called and threatened them with a lawsuit. I have to assume he's telling the truth. Jose Aldo is threatening to sue me and claims that he threatened to sue the UFC. That's a pretty big bluff. That's a big enough bluff that I think he's telling the truth. So we don't know who this attorney is or if it's you know, been verified or anything, but you know, two out of three doctors said it was broken, the rib. And then, you know, obviously the one with the most money behind this fight, the UFC, comes in and they hire a doctor who says it's not broken. That should be another thing that sends up a red flag for all fighters. You know, this is how they're going to treat you because they want to make money. And the Stitch thing is all about money, too. They don't want anybody criticizing their new business partner because then they won't make money with a renewal of this contract with Reebok in 6 years. So it's all about money. And it's just time and time again, they keep proving that they're doing these things because they care more about money than people. And it's unfortunate, you know, because I'm sure that they do a lot to help out the fighters and make life easier for them in a lot of ways, but it gets overshadowed by this shit. Just basically alienating their own people. And there's a lot of parallels here with the Stitch thing to Burt Watson, who was pretty beloved across the organization, and they fired him too because he had a run-in with an executive at the UFC. And instead of you know, mediating that, they just threw the guy out. So hopefully, you know, they get their shit together and they start figuring out that, you know, there's a different way of doing business that is going to make sure that you stay the top dog, because if this shit keeps happening, I can see a day where they're number two because of it. And, you know, it might not be a mass exodus overnight, but one by one, just like Josh Koscheck says, you could see a lot of guys say, hey, I'm done with my contract and I'm looking at greener pastures. Moving on. And, you know, it's another situation that this is probably not helping. Fedor is coming back, and he's actually come out and said that he might sign with the UFC. They're not going to demand the M1 co-promotion situation this time around, so that would help. But they also kind of said some interesting things. Vadim Finkelstein is the manager for Fedor, and somebody cornered him and got his comments. SB Nation Submission Radio actually did the interview, and they asked if he was open, Fedor, to finally signing with the UFC, and Vadim said, well, I think the UFC has a big chance to sign Fedor. It depends on what offer they make. If Dana would not only talk but do some things, and will make a good offer to Fedor, they have a big chance then. I don't know what they want him to do. stand on his head, apologize for the last time, I don't know. Jump through some hoops, we'll see. But I really think he's going to end up with Bellator. He's got you know, the relationship with Scott Coker from Strikeforce. I don't ever remember hearing any kind of friction between those two happening while he was with Strikeforce, even though he didn't really have great results at times. He lost his first fight there in a while to Verdum. But M1 Global is out of the picture as far as co-promoting, so it's definitely going to make it easier for the UFC if they want him. At this point, though, I don't know if the UFC even wants the guy. And I don't know if they want to get into a bidding war with Bellator, even though they could afford to. And even though Frank Mir is the first person to call Fedor out, I would think I'd rather see Fedor versus Kimbo. We'll see. And another guy that's standing up for Jose Aldo, surprisingly, TJ Dillashaw, who's you know, got a little bit of a beef. It's going to be materializing again this weekend with another guy from the same camp as Jose Aldo. It's him and Barao. So it's pretty surprising, but. Says, I feel bad for him. That was going to be Aldo's biggest payday to date, the McGregor fight. He says, defending your belt, that's putting a lot on the line, and having something that's going to affect you that much isn't worth it. It's not like you got a bruised hand or something. This controls your entire body. It was definitely impossible to fight through the injury, he said, because he's had to pull out of a planned title defense against Renan Barao. He says, mine was a fracture, so they wouldn't even let me fight because it was too dangerous. You can't even sneeze, cough, laugh, or even watching a funny movie is not a great idea. Getting out of bed hurts, talking about rib injuries. If you can't even get out of bed, how the heck are you supposed to go fight another man, especially for a world title? He adds again, I felt bad for him. I thought Mendez was going to go out there and beat McGregor, so he would have missed out on a lot of money. The injury was legit. If he has a hurt rib, that sucks. And, of course, with Fedor coming back, we've got Randy Couture actually came out recently and says he's got the itch himself to come back. And possibly if that fight were to happen, Fedor versus Randy, that would definitely not be in the UFC. So, obviously, that opportunity is only in one place, which is Bellator. So that adds another interesting angle to it. Randy's 52, though. I think that's a little bit older than Fedor. I'm not sure what Fedor's age is. Obviously, it's not too old. We've seen Ken Shamrock fight in his 50s, so. He says, I think it's a fight that in our heyday would have been an amazing fight and a crossover fight for that time. Whether or not I'd be willing to step out there now at 52 years old and come back out of retirement after 4 years of working on other stuff in my life, I don't know. But he said, anytime you sit inside and watch fights, you can't help but get antsy. You want to train or do something, but I'm pretty comfortable with the decision I made 4 years ago. I think I got out at the right time. Right time for me. I've been very happy and very busy. So I doubt it, but it's possible. Now, we've had a lot of UFC action in the last couple of weeks. We previewed all the fights last week, but I forgot to even preview the Bellator fights last week from Mohegan Sun. It's a pretty interesting card. I did end up watching it. And we had Douglas Lima lost his title to Andrei Korashkov. Korashkov just one loss, 18 wins. Douglas falls to 26-6. It was a unanimous decision, and Korashkov really impressed me with his jab in this fight. I don't know if you got to see this card, Tom, but it was pretty intense.
Yeah, and that just set up his takedowns. And that surprised me about the takedowns. I figured this would be settled on the feet, but it was a surprising performance.
And the co-main event, Paul Daly came back, trying to set himself up for another fight with Josh Koscheck. Post-fight antics, hopefully. Paul took out Dennis Olsen by TKO in the second round. And he had a little bit of difficulty in the first round, but overcame that and handled himself pretty well against Olsen. Tough guy, though. You know, it took a lot to get him out of there. And probably the best performance of the entire night, other than Michael Page's, which we'll get to in a minute, Brennan Ward absolutely destroyed Roger Carroll.
The leprechaun who needs some boxing training. The one-dimensional leprechaun. What do you have, 16 and 11? All 16 wins by submission. No takedown skills, cosmetic standard. Did he throw a punch in the whole fight? I hate to be this critical, but you got to call what you see. I mean, I in the dressing room, I kind of figured where this was going when I seen him. And but he just, this is MMA, you know.
Right. And Brennan just basically swarmed him. I mean, he had a lot of fire under him for this fight. And, I mean, obviously Roger Carroll knew this was a very big opportunity for him. He kept talking about it in the pre-fight interviews and stuff. But just did not have the same skill level as Brennan. And I think this is kind of a problem with Bellator. They keep bringing these guys up. Like Carroll and Olsen, they haven't really been on any Bellator cards before. You know, this was their first big opportunity, and here they are in the main card. And it's all well and good that they're bringing new people in, but you're bringing these new people in, you're putting them up against legends. Obviously, they're going to lose.
Well, let's look at our opening bout there with Paige and Rudy Bear.
Right.
Just be honest. Were you shocked at the outcome of that? it gets down to I think that they're going to have to start making these guys fight. The top guys, there's plenty of top guys. There were plenty of tough welterweights on that card, but none of them were fighting each other. That's going to have to change.
And definitely one of those things where Michael Page, he kind of reminds me of Roy Jones Jr. a little bit, the way he moves around, a lot of head movement, a lot of antics. But he's a little bit more blatant with it, I think. He's actually beyond Anderson Silva's clowning sometimes.
maybe it's time to put him in with put him in there with Paul Daly, and let's see how that would work. But maybe there's... It's almost like there's some kind of weird prohibition against the Brits fighting each other so far. So hopefully that'll change.
Right. And we had Paul Bradley was doing pretty good against Chris Honeycutt, but then they had an accidental clash of heads that stopped that one in the second round. So much for that fight.
I definitely thought that was pretty good matchmaking.
Yeah, that was probably the closest fight of the night.
Yeah.
Lima did pretty good in the first couple of rounds, but beyond that, he was getting his ass kicked. But as far as the televised stuff, that was the closest fight, I thought. And the seventh fight of the night, Dean Hancock beat Alex Dunworth by TKO in the second round. And we had Colleen Medeiros beat Sarah Pyant by Kimura submission in the first round. Ryan Quinn beat Waylon Lowe by guillotine choke. Remo Cardarelli beat Billy Giovanella by unanimous decision. K. Ken Moy beat Blair Tugman by a triangle choke submission in the third round. Parker Porter beat Eric Bedard by a key lock submission in the second round. And Ilya Katal beat Nicholas Sergiacomi by a rear naked choke submission in the first fight of the night. So, we've been totally silent on the boxing front. So we gotta get some boxing stuff.
Yeah.
How about last weekend's fights? I know I didn't really watch any of them, but I know that what's his name?
Chavez.
Julio
Chavez Jr. did not make weight again.
Oh, I didn't hear that part of it.
Again.
I heard he beat the guy, but I didn't know he didn't make weight.
Oh, he beat the guy. And you're talking about a guy here that's, you know, basically he was, it looked like he was fighting a guy that was two weight classes heavier than him. Basically, that was the situation. Chavez, like in his last fight when he lost to Fanfara, you could tell Chavez, you know, was just outgunned against a bigger man. And that was basically like the situation here. You know, Chavez was now just a bigger man. And, you know, he went to the decision. And, you know, it was a competitive fight, but he was just too big.
Right. Yeah, and you know, he's talking about going back to light heavyweight.
I don't know. I mean, you figure in his only fight at light heavyweight, he got tattooed.
Yeah, and he blamed it on his knee when he quit, but he was getting his ass kicked up in the left. So
tattooed.
Not a good idea there, as far as I can see, but. You know, maybe the knee had a lot to do with it. Maybe it was an injury that was bothering him beforehand and didn't allow him to train as hard as he wanted to. So, who knows? We'll see. But obviously, if he's got a problem making weight, he needs to think about going out.
Yeah, big time.
And speaking of heavyweights, Rosalind Chagaev beat Francesco Pianetta on Saturday from Germany. So, he's got the WBA World Heavyweight title there. And it's pretty impressive performance. He knocked him out in the very first round. Didn't give him a chance to get his game going. Let's see what else we got. See, also Arthur Abraham had a big fight with Stieglitz. Robert Stieglitz.
Yeah, what was it, the fourth fight, I think it was?
I don't know.
I think it was the fourth time they fought in. This time, Abraham really took it to him. No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
I just have the BoxRec homepage result there.
BoxRec sucks anymore.
I know. This says win. Doesn't say anything. Doesn't even say, you know, it's got the front page.
You'd have to click on, like, the fighter or whatever, you know, to see, like, the full result, which, you know, it sucks. Let's be honest. I don't sugarcoat things. It sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you got the home page, right, and it's got results, okay? So you've got July 18th on the top, A. Abraham W. R. Stieglitz. Doesn't tell you how it happens. You know, there's room over there on the right of Stieglitz for KO, unanimous decision, split decision, whatever. You know, it's only...
Yeah, it's like one of those ones. Thanks for telling us something we already know.
Right? Two or three letters there, and they set it up so that you have to look further. That's how they get you.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, I'll bring up Arthur Abraham and check that out. Get more on that one. We had a big fight card in the Philippines over the weekend as well. Manny's territory. If I can find it, here it is. Francisco Rodriguez Jr. got beat by Donnie Nietes in the main event for the WBO World Light Flyweight title. And the IBF Youth Featherweight title went to Mark Magseo, who remains undefeated after his fight with Rafael Reyes. That was about it on that card. Good stuff. Speaking of Manny, too, that's another bit of news this week that came through. Bob Arum and Manny are pretty pissed at each other.
Really?
Because Manny wants to do his own rehab, and Bob Arum had set him up for appointment with a specialist to do rehab, and Manny just totally skipped it. So I guess Bob's pretty pissed off about it, and he says he doesn't even want to talk about Manny because he's not an active fighter right now. He's not acting like an active fighter. So who knows? Maybe we'll see.
Yeah, and I'm gonna close with one statement. One statement. Hey Bob, how much money did he make you, and he was the one in there taking the beating?
Right.
Thank you. I win.
Also, over in the United Kingdom, we had a battle of the unbeatens, Terry Flanagan versus Jose Zepeda on Saturday. That was for the vacant WBO World Lightweight title, and ended up Zepeda got a dislocated left shoulder and had to stay on a stool for the second round, and the referee stopped the fight. So it's, I guess, a no contest, or nobody loses. I don't know how that works when it's second round. There's all kinds of different rules in different jurisdictions. So. Sounds like it was a no contest because they don't have anybody showing a loss. We also had the WBO Intercontinental Super Lightweight title on the line between Jack Catterall, 11-0. He won the fight against Gabriel Fernando Punalef Kalfin. That's a mouthful. 22-6-3 was his record. He goes down by TKO in the sixth round. And also, Liam Walsh remains undefeated at 18-0 at lightweight. He beat Isaias Santos Sampaio for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Lightweight title. Sampaio falls to 23-10. He was also knocked out in the sixth round. That's that card. This is going back quite a ways, actually. I don't know why they're showing me results from the 11th. We're going all the way back to Hank Lundy. Yeah, geez, I've been reading results from 2 weeks ago. What the hell?
Yeah, that was on the 11th.
Yeah, they don't even have. I mean, I don't know what the hell's going on here in BoxRec.
BoxRec sucks, man. You got it.
They've got July 18th, right? Results. On the front page, you click more. The first page of results is July 16th. What the hell's going on? I can't find the results here. Anyway, I said I would look up Stieglitz fight. Yeah, that was TKO in the sixth round. Arthur got the win. He is now the WBO World Super Middleweight Titleist. I think he already had that, right? Anyway. Stieglitz falls to 47-5-1. And Arthur goes up to 42-4-0. I guess I'm going to have to click on all this stuff individually. We also had Scott Quigg beat Kiko Martinez. Obviously, I don't have the results right in front of me. We didn't have any Premier Boxing Champion stuff this last week, did we?
You know what? I don't think the only cards I know were the Showtime cards, in the afternoon, the 4 o'clock show in the afternoon, and then the Chavez fight in the evening.
Okay, so I guess we're going to look. What do we got?
At least we're getting some afternoon free TV shows. And that is huge. I've been saying that for years.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely a good idea to put stuff back on free TV. But, like I mentioned with the whole controversy surrounding that monopoly situation, I just hope they can do it the right way and not be stepping on so many toes of everybody else trying to do their thing. I do think there's a lot of jealousy because nobody else could get that kind of money to throw at the networks. But, a lot of it is founded in fact. And the whole shady way they got that thing going with the guy leaving the hedge fund to come on board, it's not good for the sport when you've got that kind of stuff wrapped into something that they're claiming is really good for boxing. just really hope that they don't, you know, keep going down that line of doing stuff like booking venues just to cancel so other people can't get them. Pretty underhanded shit. We've got this weekend. Hello, Box Rec, Box Rec. It's a pretty interesting fight in the United Kingdom. Not really a main event or anything, but I just noticed one guy's record is 56-12. 56-12. 10-round fight here, co-main event in Derbyshire in the United Kingdom. George Arias, 56-12. Fighting Kiwi Fury, who is 15-0. I think he's Tyson Fury's brother.
Is it really?
I think so, or cousin. I know they're related. So both of them.
But it's still not a cool name. It's Tyson Fury.
Right?
That name is just awesome. I'm sorry. You know, it's like the guy's a loudmouth. You know, he's really trash talking. You know, he's hyping a fight up with Klitschko. I think he's actually going to get annihilated. But what a great name. That's a name you can market. You know, imagine if he was American. You know, and, you know, the Americans are really looking for a good heavyweight to build off of. You know, dude, you could market that name. It's like, dude, I'm going to watch Tyson Fury this weekend fight. It sounds like I said, a few weeks ago, it sounds like a professional wrestler, or it sounds like something you would see, like, in a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
Yeah.
Van Damme would be like, yes, I have to go to the tournament to take on Tyson Fury. Then they'd be like, then they'd do all the stuff they did in all the Van Damme movies. They'd put him on the leg stretching thing, and then he'd have to go there and, like, kick a tree or something. It's something they did in every single movie that he ever made.
Well, speaking of big guys, Sergey Kovalev, I don't know where this fight came from. I have nothing in my inbox, as far as I know, on this. I know we've interviewed Kathy Duva before from Defense. She's promoting this one, so I don't know why we're not getting their press releases, but this is a great card. Sergey Kovalev is in the main event. Obviously, he's undefeated, 27-0-1, and he's got three title belts, WBA Super World Light Heavyweight title, IBF World Light Heavyweight title, and WBO World Light Heavyweight title. He's fighting Najib Mohammadi, who I've never heard of, but he's 37-4.
Yeah, and I was looking at his record. And don't get up for a beer.
Also on this card, Unieski Gonzalez taking a big step up at 16-0. He's fighting Jean Pascal, who's 29-3-1. He used to have a title himself.
Pascal, you know, and Pascal's fought some really good guys. I mean, you figure Pascal's been in there, you know, with the Bernard Hopkins twice. He's been in there with the Kovalevs. So now the question is, you know, especially that fight with Kovalev, how much did that take out of him? Because, I mean, he gave a competitive fight, but at the end of the day, he took a pretty good shellacking.
Right. And Premier Boxing Champions is on again this weekend. Baby Kuminoff fighting BJ Flores for the interim WBA World Cruiserweight title here.
Well, good to see BJ back in the ring. You know, a good fighter and very capable. And unfortunately, you're seeing more of him behind the announce table than actually in the ring.
Right. So he's been training hard for this one. As I mentioned in my defense article, Babu Chuminov got destroyed by Bernard Hopkins because he's got some shitty-ass defense. And he's another one of those white guys trying to throw the up jab.
Yeah, right.
His style is horrible defensively. I mean, I just don't even understand how he won so many fights. He's only 15-2, but, you know, he's been able to get all these big fights somehow.
A lot of it depends. I mean, and I'm going to go back and I'm going to bring up another Bernard Hopkins opponent from back in the day when he was still middleweight champion doing his record number of defenses, the 20 defenses he made. He fought a guy back in 2003. I was at the fight in Philadelphia against a guy named Murad Hakkar, and Hakkar was something like 29-1. And I would love to see the 29 guys that he had beaten because I don't think those 29 guys could have beat, you know, Sister Mary Catherine at St. Luke's. In fact, well, I should take that back because Sister Mary Catherine was pretty scary. You know, a lot of guys wouldn't have beaten her. You know, she was pretty rough and pretty mean with that roar. But I don't know. I mean, the way Hikar, you know, obviously to fight a legend like Hopkins, who was still relatively close to the prime of his career, okay, that's a tall task. But the performance that he put out there was atrocious. I mean, I've seen kids in their first amateur fight put it up against and put a better effort forth.
Right.
So a lot of times you say, guy, hey, how did he have these 15 wins or how's he beaten these guys? Well, you put him in there with a guy like Bernard, who was so cagey and so hard to look good against, who just makes you look bad. You could be a good fighter and he makes you look bad. The second fight against Pascal, Pascal's obviously a very good fighter. Second fight, he made him look ridiculous. So that's a hard barometer to put it on. But Shumanov at the same time, he's a guy, it's like, you know, when you're looking at, like, your top 10 light heavyweights in the world, should not be appearing anywhere near him.
And I'm looking up BJ Flores right now, but he's only got one loss. I'm kind of curious who he lost to. But he's got double the amount of wins as Shumanov has fights, about, you know, 17 total fights for Shumanov, 31 total wins for BJ, so almost double.
Yeah, BJ's a good fighter, and I would say that I think his I'm trying to remember his loss as well. I don't have box rec up right now, but when you see it, please tell me.
Yeah, I'm gonna check it out. Also on this card, we've got 24-4 fighting Claudio Marrero, who's 18-1, and Jordan Schimmel 19-0 fighting Isaiah Thomas, who is 14-0. So somebody's always got to go there. That's a cruiserweight fight. Ramos versus Marrero's featherweight. This is actually for the title, too, the USBA cruiserweight title, which is vacant. So let's see. And that's pretty much it for this coming weekend. We've got some big stuff coming up on August 1st, but we'll wait until next week to talk about that stuff. Like I said before, it's probably going to be Paulie Malignaggi's funeral. Instead of a fight there with Jenny Garcia, I don't understand why he took that fight. If you're going to do one
money,
you know, he's kind of dabbling with the idea of retiring. So if you're in that mentality, why would you take a fight with a guy like Garcia?
Now, I don't think Garcia is as strong and as physical as Sean Porter is. I think that was a real bad fight for Malignaggi because Porter was quick-handed, physical, and he was just able to rough-shot Malignaggi a year and a half ago. Garcia's a little bit better of a guy. Garcia's a counterpuncher. Garcia's a little, you know, Garcia's quick-handed, but he's not as physical. He's not as rough and tumble as a Sean Porter is. He's not a guy that's going to rough you up on the inside as much. He's going to more counterpunch you. So, I mean, style-wise, I think Malignaggi would have a better chance against Garcia than he did Porter. And remember, Garcia is moving up in weight. So it's like Malignaggi taking a fight with a guy that is more along his same size line instead of fighting a guy who was naturally much larger than he is, as Sean Porter was. So, I mean, does Malignaggi, is he an underdog? Yes. Does he have a chance? Yeah, he has a chance. But he would have to box the perfect game, and he would have to almost – see, he doesn't have any punching power at all, and Garcia's got a good chin. I mean, Garcia took some good punches. You know, he took punches against Lucas Matisse, who's a murderous puncher, and he stood up to him. He took a hell of a few shots from Zab Judah. He took some good shots from Lamont Peterson. He stood up to all of them. So is there a way that – Malignaggi's going to hurt him? No, not at all. But Malignaggi, if Garcia fades again in the later rounds, if Malignaggi can keep it close early, he can, you know, just outwork him late. I honestly don't see it happening. And if you force me to put a pick in on this fight right now, I got to go with the Garcia late round stoppage. You know, that I think he's not going to run roughshod over him like Porter did, but I think he'll eventually break him down And I think, you know, his counterpunching and just the fact that he's going to be able to walk through Malinowski's punches, you know, and put a lot of pressure on him will be the deciding factor, maybe nine-ish rounds, maybe we're between 9 and 11 rounds.
That's a big call about it next week, of course. It's an interesting matchup. I did look at who's got us on the speaker. We got Danny Green was the opponent that got the better of BJ Flores. He beat him in his home country, it looks like, of Australia. It is the only fight that BJ fought out of the United States, actually. I don't know if that had anything to do with the decision. It was a pretty wide margin. The closest one was 117 to 112, the unanimous decision. That was Steve Scott. And Dave Moretti, I don't think he's Australian. He was one of the ones with the widest margin. He had it 118 to 110. Danny was 30-3 at the time. So that was back in November of 2010. So it's been almost 5 years since he had a loss. I don't think that's going to change. We'll see. Also, we've got to talk about UFC on Fox 16, Dillashaw versus Barao 2. TJ's coming in 11-2, fighting Zanin, who's 33-2. This is a big fight for Fox. Also, we have Misha Tate fighting Jessica Eye in the co-main event. Misha is 16-5. Jessica is 11-2. And, of course, as I mentioned in the previous shows, we talked about how Misha might be setting herself up for a fight with Cyborg. So look for that to happen. Misha actually came out recently and said she would fight at 140, and she would take that fight. So I know the UFC's been eyeing bringing Cyborg in and then, you know, doing that so that she can at least prove that she can make 140, and then she'll have to make 135 to fight Rousey. But that's a pretty good barometer. If you put her up against Misha Tate, the one who lasted the longest with her, probably a pretty good idea to see if Tate can beat her. Obviously, Rousey could probably beat her. So we'll see. Even though fight math doesn't always work that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Another fight on this card, Edson Barboza. He's 15-3, fighting Paul Felder, undefeated at 10-0. And then a real big one, I think. This is a couple big names that have been around a long time. Joe Lauzon versus Takanori Gomi. Joe is 24-10. Takanori is 35-10. And we've got
hard to believe Gomi's still fighting. It just seems like he's been around like first generation almost. Wow, that is amazing. What a career.
Yes, it is. And then we have Gian Vellante fighting Tom Lawler. Gian is 13-5. Lawler is 9-5. We got Jim Miller back in action in the seventh fight of the night. He's 24-6, fighting Danny Castillo, who's 17-8. And we have Ben Saunders, 18-6-2, fighting Kenny Robertson, who's 15-3. Actually interviewed Ben Saunders before, way back in the day. And we've got Eddie Wineland, 21-10-1, fighting Brian Caraway, who's 19-7. So Misha's fighting on the same card as her boyfriend. That's a new one. And also we've got Darren Cruikshank, 16-6, fighting James Krause, who's 21-7. Ramsey Nijem, 9-5, fighting Andrew Holbrook, 9-0. Even though he's undefeated 9-0, he doesn't even have a share dog picture. It's the only one on this whole card. Doesn't have one. And Jessamyn Duke back in action. She's actually on the list of fighters we could possibly get an interview at some point. We couldn't get her this week because she's probably cutting weight, even though I requested it. But she's 3-2. She's fighting Elizabeth Phillips, 4-3. And the first fight of the night, Zach Cummings gets another opportunity. He's 17-4, fighting Dominique Steele, who's 13-5. That's a lot of fights for a first fight. Usually it's, you know, 2-2, 1-4, you know, something like that. But, man, that's a lot of fights. 17 wins for one guy, 13 wins for another. Tells you it's a pretty stacked card. And, Tom, I did read the article that you sent about the oversaturation issue with the UFC, and I really don't think that's their main problem. I don't think that really hurts their bottom line that much. It might aggravate fans because they can't keep up with it, like the article says, but I really don't think there's any evidence in that article that shows it's hurting their bottom line.
The question is, we don't see oversaturation talked about, say, with college basketball. I mean,
how many
hours and hours and hours and hours 24/7 is that on ESPN during the winter? And other sports, you don't hear that anywhere else. I mean, there's too many baseball games, too much NFL, too much NHL. You just don't seem to hear that in other sports. So I tend to agree with you.
So that's that one. Then we had Michael Bisping had a hell of a win last weekend over in the UK, Scotland. And obviously he was the fan, so he really had to work hard to win that fight. That Taylor's Lates was really stalking him down and trying to connect with him. He did. He got rocked a couple times, but the count was moving all over the ring. He used every friggin' inch of that ring, the cage in Scotland. And, you know, it's just a crafty veteran. It's the perfect definition of that phrase, crafty veteran, the way he fought this fight. Lates, his problem was he just didn't run fast enough, I guess. He couldn't keep up with him. Didn't use the ring as well. He was just kind of plodding around and trying to land big bombs. And even though he wasn't really throwing anything ridiculously complicated, you know, no spinning back fists or, you know, crazy flying knees or that. Bisping was just doing it with the basics, you know, a couple leg kicks here and there, body kicks, punches, and just movement, lots of movement. And so he got the split decision win. I really don't even think it should have been a split decision. I thought he really, ring generalship alone, won him that fight. But apparently one of the judges thought Taylor's did enough to win. So Bisping improves to 27-7. Taylor's falls to 25-5 with the loss. But it doesn't really do anything. One thing I agree with the article on is it doesn't really do anything as far as the title picture. You know, Bisping really didn't improve any shot he had at a title with that win. Just made himself look pretty good for the fans. That's about it, you know. So I don't know where he goes from here, but he definitely proved with this fight that he can be a headliner. You know, he can be a main event fighter. He's just one of those people. He's got the name, he's got the notoriety, he's got the attitude and the knowledge. He's a big fixture on Fox Sports. Behind the announcing table there, but I don't know as far as his fight career if he's really going to be able to make another title run, or if he even really wants that. Who knows? I mean, I haven't heard that is his ultimate goal at all still today. But you know, everybody says that's what they want. Anyway, we also had Evan Dunham beat Ross Pearson by unanimous decision. That was a barn burner of a fight. Pearson just couldn't handle the wrestling. Got in a body lock early and just couldn't really do anything to get out of the wrestling and take advantage of the time on the feet. Evan just looked totally well-rounded and definitely doing well. Now we had Joseph Duffy beat Ivan George by a triangle choke in the very first round. It was a quick one, 3:05 in. And the one big fighter from Scotland made a big impression, Joanne Calderwood. Very soft-spoken on The Ultimate Fighter, but Man, she literally beat Courtney Casey's ass. You saw that part, Tom, but she was punching her in the butt. End of the fight.
Actually,
I've got a lot of demons I had to work out tonight, and nothing personal, Courtney, but it's how it had to go. And Courtney actually came all the way from Hawaii and just showed a lot of guts and heart. And Joanne threw a couple things that really impressed me in this fight. I like to throw the back kick myself, so that was another thing where I saw it and I said, wow, that's how it works when you land it. She hit Courtney with a back kick to the belly that just dropped her to the seat of her pants. And then another time she threw a right hand to the body and a left hook to the head, and it worked so well, she did it like 5 seconds later again and landed it, both punches. So very impressive on her part, and good to see her get the win. She was actually my favorite fighter on that whole season. Just very impressive that the way she fights, and it's got one of those voices. I just think it's so funny listening to her talk. Anyway, Leon Edwards beat Pavel Pollack by unanimous decision. Stephen Ray beat Leonardo Mafra Teixeira by TKO in the first round. Patrick Holohan beat Vaughn Lee by unanimous decision. Alir Latifi beat Hans Stringer by first round knockout from punches. Mikhail Lebeau beat Timu Pakalin by unanimous decision. Robert Whiteford beat Paul Redmond by first round KO. And Jimmy Rivera also beat Marcus Brimage by first round KO. In the first fight of the night, Daniel Omelanchik beat Chris De La Rocha by TKO. And right now we've got to get our first guest on the air, Willie Yates. And we'll get him. If I can find him. Willie Yates. UFC is pretty new to Willie. He does have first UFC win, so we'll talk to him about that, of course. His overall record is 12-5 as a fighter. Hello, Willie.
Yeah, how you doing?
Hey, this is Rob.
Hello?
This is the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show here. How's it going?
Right.
And we're just talking about you had your first win in the UFC not too long ago, July 12th. Daryl Monty.
Yep.
Took him out pretty quick, too. Didn't want to leave it to the judges.
Not at all.
KO. So tell us, how did you first get into fighting?
One of my buddies, he thought he was cool, and he was taking some Muay Thai classes, and he was messing around with all my other buddies, and I was like, well, hey, this guy's pretty, he knows what he's doing, And I come to find out he really didn't. So, but I joined Muay Thai. I was doing Muay Thai for a little bit, and I just got good at it and started doing wrestling, jiu-jitsu, and look at me now.
And what's your ultimate goal with the sport of mixed martial arts?
My ultimate goal is just to be known as one of the best. When people talk about flyweight division, when they say flyweight, I want my name to always be in that mix. That's my goal right there. Everybody wants to be the best champion. Of course, that's my goal. I want to do that, but I just ultimately want to be in the mix. I just want my name to be known.
And do you have a favorite punch or strike or submission, anything like that, that you really like?
No, man. I'm really unpredictable to myself. It's just if I see it, I'll get it. There's nothing really that I have that I have as my go-to move or anything like that. But just, I'm just really unorthodox my damn self.
Cool. Yeah, that's one of those things where sometimes instinct is a lot better than thinking when it comes to
the motor.
You got to kind of have that switch go off so that you're not thinking about it to really be effective sometimes.
Exactly.
But what's the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight?
It all varies, you know. It kind of depends on opponents, you know, the camp situation. I don't really have anything necessarily that we have going on to get prepared for each fight, you know. It just depends.
Right. And how about your best moment in the sport so far?
One of my best moments, I would say, winning the belt in Tachi Palace.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my greatest, you know, achievements so far, really. It got me pretty much to the point in my career where I'm at right now. So it was a really huge stepping stone for me. And, I took it, and look where it led me.
It was easy as 1, 2, 3, right? That was the time of the knockout, 1:26.
pretty much.
All right. And what was the toughest fight so far of your career?
I would say toughest, really. I would date it back to the John Rodger fight. Not necessarily saying the toughest opponent. It was just the toughest mentally, just because, like I said, it was new atmosphere and that was my first fight. But it was a little tougher on me mentally than all my other fights.
Right. It's like it's the longest you've gone into a fight too in a long time.
Yeah.
4-0-6 into the third. Looking at your record here, the last time you went a full fight was 2012.
Yeah, you know, I think it was Aaron Hawani who said it, you know, this guy fights like he's double parked outside. So, you know, get out and go home, baby.
Right. Yeah. All right. So what do you love most about the sport?
I just love competing, really, you know. I just love competing and just having competition, just something just to give me drive, you know, some kind of motivation. This sport is very motivational, you know. It pushes you, it tests you a lot all the time. I get tested every day. So, you know, I just love that competitiveness in the sport. So that's what I just love. I love about MMA, you know. It's different than any other sport in the world, and I'm glad it found me.
Awesome. And what's this opportunity been like with the UFC? You know, you've had a couple fights under your belt now. Obviously, it's to step up from the, you know, the other leagues that you've been involved in. It's got to be a big opportunity for you that means a lot, right?
Oh, well, yeah, most definitely. You know, every fighter that's, you know, that gets in the sport, they dream. Their ultimate goal is really to just, you know, make it to the UFC. And I'm happy to be here, and happy to just have the opportunity. You know, I don't want to just say that I made it, you know, because anybody can make it. I want to make an impact. I want to make a mark. I want to make, you know, statements. You know, I just want to be that guy to put some mix into this flyweight division. That's all I want to do. You know, I want to bring the fans. I want to bring the notoriety back to this 125 division. That's another one of my goals too.
Cool. And what about the division there in the UFC? Is there anybody out there that you particularly would like to fight, or you think you match well with?
No, not necessarily right now. You know, I gotta worry about Dustin Ortiz. You know, me and Dustin they just announced me and Dustin will be fighting August 8th. In Nashville, so he's the next guy to get it. So I just got to worry about him right now, and after that, we can go on and see what's next.
Well, obviously, you had a pretty quick win last time, but are you worried at all? It's a pretty quick turnaround for, you know, fighting. Very
No, actually, it's good. You know, I still feel comfortable. You know, I think I have that edge. I'm so comfortable because Chen Hai just fought not too long ago, about a week and a half ago. So I didn't sustain any injuries, you know. It was a tough good camp that I had. I felt good throughout it, and why not?
And what do you think about Dustin? Have you been watching his fights and thinking about his style and all that?
Dustin, he's a little grinder, you know. He's given little areas that he's good in. Everybody's here for a reason, so I'm not going to downplay him. and we'll just see what's going to go down. You know, August 8th.
Anyone else got any questions? We got a couple other hosts here. You might not have noticed.
Yeah, Willie. Well, first off, Willie, congratulations on how far you've come. I mean, I think that your career is really rolling good, and also from looking at your record, you're very well rounded. You know, I think you can knock people out, you can submit them, and that's the key. Now, you know that you're in a division that may be the most athletic division in the UFC. I mean, everyone's cardio is insane, it seems, you know. I mean, the pace you guys can go at, and I think it's a wide-open division because if you can string together a couple real impressive finishes, I think you're on your way to the top. Maybe it's looking at a title shot down the road. I mean, I know it's kind of early to talk about that. But my question is, from looking at the champ, you know, you're in a division with a very dominant champion. And have you seen anything there that looks like you could maybe exploit if you get the chance?
Oh, of course. You know, as a fighter, you always think that you're better than the next guy, right?
Sure.
But, you know, like I said, DJ, he's the champ. He's the best for a reason, you know. But, and also, he has people that's on his head, and I'm one of those guys, and I'm trying to let it be known, you know. He's finishing guys, he's doing it all, you know. But then I don't think he's fought anybody necessarily as big and as strong and as fast as. Hopefully, you know, when I get to that point, moving into the world, why maybe in the future be the next.
Yeah, because like I said, I think the thing that stands out. You know how to finish fights, and that's what people like. I mean, you know, sometimes you can't finish everyone. It'll go to the decision, but, you know, as long as you can keep those finishes going, that's the way to get the name. So just keep doing what you're doing. Keep training hard.
Thank you.
Yeah, 6 out of your last 7 fights didn't even go 2 minutes. That's pretty impressive. How do people find you out there, Willie?
You can find me on Facebook, Willie Yates, and then on Twitter. If you want to find me on Twitter, it's WhoopAssWillie. Same with Instagram, you can find me, WhoopAssWillie.
All right.
I like that name, WhoopAssWillie.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, so you guys can find me all out there.
I guess Slick Willie was already taken, right?
That's a good. That was a good one. I haven't heard that one yet, but that was a good one. I like that.
That was Bill Clinton's nickname. Anyway, anybody you want to thank or give a shout-out to before we let you go?
Also, I always want to give a shout-out to my team, you know, Pinnacle MMA. They have pushed me, and they did everything for me to this point in my career to help me out. In every way possible, and I just want to give a shout out to my team, you know, everybody that shows me love and support, you know, my family also, all my kids out there, you know, they love me, I love them, they love me, and they push me to be the man I am right now.
Awesome. Yeah, we go way back with Chachi Palace and Jeremy Luchow there, so it's definitely great to see him take this step and, you know, get involved at this level, so. I'm glad we hooked up with him and got the opportunity to talk to you, and we definitely look forward to seeing what you can do in the future. You got any final thoughts you want to share before you?
No, not so far. Just, you know, thank you guys for giving me this opportunity to have this interview.
No problem. Anytime. And like we always say, don't forget us when you become champ.
There you go.
No change. I'm always going to be with Pest Willie. Everybody know that.
All right,
Willie, good luck.
Well, you have an awesome talking. Thanks. Okay, so we got to jump pretty quickly over to Alex Reyes, the lightweight champ from King of the Cage. And he's 11-2, all 11 fights came in a row after losing his first couple of fights to Daniel Nova and McDonald.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And I do think with Willie, that's a name to remember because he can finish. And a lot of times in that division, you don't see a lot of finishes, and he's just finishing everyone. So this is interesting.
Okay. And also, like Willie, he fights like he's double parts. He's got a lot of first-round finishes. That was a good line from Willie. It's the first I've ever heard that. fights like he's double parked outside. Anyway, yeah, that's always impressive when you can take a guy out in the very first round. And like Willie's doing, obviously that means you can take more fights. Yeah. Hello, Alex.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron from the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. We also have Psychic Tom with us and Tony the Tornado boxing guy.
What's up? How's it going, guys?
Good. We were just talking about your record there, 11 straight wins, a lot of first-round finishes. How'd you first get into the fight game? Start with that.
I just always liked the sport as a kid. I grew up watching, the first UFCs with my dad. We used to go to the video store back when they had video stores out here in California. We would rent, the UFC fights and we'd watch them. And just always been interested in it and started wrestling when I was 14 and was around the sport and kind of just, found my way into it that way. Fell in love with it and I was naturally competitive and I started fighting.
Awesome. And you're the King of the Cage champion there. What was that like, fighting for that belt and getting that?
It was awesome, man. I was thankful for the opportunity to get to fight for the title. And as soon as the opportunity arose, I took it. And it was a great experience to have my friends and family out there watching me, supporting me, all the hard work that I put into it, leading up to it. It was a great feeling going on there and winning one of the titles that I have for King of the Cage.
Your knockouts come from punches. You have a favorite punch that you like?
Honestly, any opening you give me, I'm gonna find. I got power in both hands. I can't say I don't have a favorite punch. My favorite punch is the punch that you don't see coming.
Well, I've heard the ones a couple times we've asked that. Some people have said the one that lands. That's my favorite punch.
All right.
Let's see, that's a better one. All right. And what's your ultimate goal with the sport?
Oh, my goal? To be considered one of the best in the world. I want to keep climbing that ladder and keep fighting, keep winning, and, go down the history books as one of the greatest fighters that has lived.
Awesome. And do you have any idea or what's next? Do you have any opponents?
I do have a fight coming up. I do have a fight coming up August 29th. In California at the Citizens Bank Arena for King of the Cage. I'm actually fighting for the welterweight belt. I currently have the lightweight title and the junior welterweight title, and I've been given the opportunity to fight for the welterweight title. And in doing so, in capturing the title, I will be the first in organization history to have the one fighter to hold three belts at one time.
Wow.
So I'm pretty excited for that opportunity.
That's pretty good. You probably really can't do that in a lot of organizations either. They wouldn't even let you.
That's why I said no. I'm grateful for the opportunity. I'm pretty sure it'd be tough in other organizations, but given the circumstances, they gave me the opportunity, and I'm jumping all over it. So I'm definitely excited to go out there, put on a show, and add another knockout victory or first round finish to my record.
So what, are you trying to be the Manny Pacquiao of MMA?
Those are some big shoes to fill, but I'm gonna do my best.
Awesome. How about your best moment so far in the sport?
Best moment in the sport. After my second loss, let's say you learn more from your the losses than your wins. After my second loss, I lost my first two fights. And I grew up playing football, baseball, I was athletic, and I was pretty successful in these sports. And when I started fighting, I lost my first fight, and I lost my second fight, and I almost called it quits. I was like, maybe this isn't cut out for me. I'm not used to losing like this, So I went out there, and I changed my mindset, changed the camp, got some new training partners. And ever since then, I remember that feeling of that last loss, and just keeps me driving hard every day to be successful and keep winning. So I would say that the turning point in my career where I was at the point where, yeah, I'm going to quit fighting, or I'm going to continue fighting, and decided to work harder, train harder, and to continue fighting. So that's definitely one of my biggest moments, I think.
That's pretty cool. You had 9 straight first round stoppages after that loss, that last loss. Woo. I'd say you figured out how to turn it around.
Yeah, it definitely lit a fire in my butt, man. I was like, hey, you know what? I'm not used to this, and definitely had to make a change and keep working hard. And, you know, every time you step in there, you know, you're risking it. So you just got to go in there, train as hard as you can, and, you know, rely on your training and your coaches and go in there and have fun.
And even though you're not in the UFC, you obviously follow Dana White's advice. Don't leave it in the hands of the judges. That's another thing I just noticed. It's your last loss was your last decision.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. And that's exactly how I feel about, you know, any competition, you know, baseball, football, I mean, any type of sport. You don't want to let the referees or judges have to step in. You want to go in there and completely destroy and dominate your opponent to where there's no question of, oh, maybe, was it close? No, it wasn't close, you know. I'm going to go in there and finish, and go in there and, you know, and I enjoy that, and it's fun to rush.
Right. Now, do you have anybody out there you really want to fight? I think you meant.
I'd love to get in the UFC and fight for that UFC 155 title. So that's definitely one of my goals on my list. And that opportunity to present myself, you know, I'd love to have that that chance to go on there and prove myself against the best.
All right. Al, have you been contacted by them yet at all?
No, I haven't. I have not yet. You know, all I can do is just keep working my butt off and keep doing the right things. And, you know, my time will come. You know, I believe my time will come if I continue to do the right things, keep working hard.
Oh, if you have belts, it's going to be pretty hard to ignore you.
Yeah, you know, that's the plan. You know, I'm going to let my work do the talking. You know what I mean? I'm going to go in there and continue to keep winning, taking belts, taking names, and, you know, eventually I'll get noticed, I believe.
Awesome. And who's been your toughest opponent so far?
My toughest opponent. You know, Victor Mazel was pretty tough when I fought him for the lightweight title. He was a tough kid fighting out of, I think, the lab in Arizona. He was a pretty tough opponent. But my toughest actual opponent, I believe, is myself. Every day I step into the gym, I try to get better myself every day. So as long as I'm beating myself every day, then we're doing something right.
Yeah, that was your longest fight to date, too, right?
Yeah, it was.
To the fifth.
Yeah.
I imagine that would have been a different experience.
He was a fun fight. You know, he well-rounded and, you know, I enjoyed it, you know.
Mm-hmm. What do you love most about mixed martial arts?
You know, the hard work that you put in, you know, showing up to the gym every day, working your butt off even on days you don't feel like training, the sacrifice you have to make, and the reward doing it. It's been a dream of mine since I was a kid, and just the fact that I'm able to chase the dream and make it a living, you know, I'm very blessed and thankful for that opportunity, and, you know, I love what I do, you know. To me, it's an art, you know. I go in there, I train hard, apply my skills, my techniques, my training, test myself every day in the gym, and go out there and test my techniques against my opponents. You know, it's not just technique either, you know, it's also heart and will. Who has more heart? And who's going to prove their will than each other on opponents, so... You know, just the whole competitive part of the sport, working hard every day, getting that discipline. I really like that about the sport.
Yeah. Now, what would you consider your greatest accomplishment so far?
My greatest accomplishment?
Yeah.
The opening my own martial arts studio. I've opened my own martial arts studio, and it was a tough feat. and I accomplished it. And but while doing that, I've captured two titles for King of Cage. So that in itself, you know, being able to open and run a business and continue to compete and, you know, be successful in both areas and fighting out the cage, I'm pretty proud of those achievements.
Yeah, it's always a great feeling to pass on your greatest skill to the next generation. You know, it's, it makes you feel...
Oh, definitely.
You've helped.
I enjoy teaching the kids, man, you know, seeing them grow. You know, I have two kids that I've been training for about 5 years now, and, you know, when they were 10, now they're 15, they're starting to get really competitive, and, you know, they're using all the techniques that you've shown them, and that's been passed down to you to see it continue. It's a pretty awesome feeling, man.
Yeah, I never really taught kids in boxing when I was a coach, but I got the opportunity when I was a ski instructor to work with the kids. And, you know, it's always a great feeling to, you know, put a smile on a kid's face and, you know, teach them something at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. I had some great coaches when I was a kid as well, you know, through football and baseball and wrestling. And, you know, they keep me dry. They got me into sports then. They made it fun for me, you know, while being competitive. And something that you keep with you for the rest of your life. And, you know, I enjoy to try to be a positive influence or role model to these, my students, you know, these kids out there. So
awesome.
It's definitely a good feeling. Very rewarding.
And it sounds like you already got your retirement set up.
Yeah, I get a little backwards. You know, most fighters will get out and you know, make a name or be successful fighting and then open up a studio. You know, I kind of did it backwards. Had a lot of setbacks with injuries earlier in my career.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the sport. I love teaching and helping my studio, primarily the kids program, you know. Of course, it's a growing program now. I have a couple of fighters in me that got, you know, amateur titles as well in MMA. But now it's like I said, it's definitely a blessing, man. I'm very thankful for my family, my friends, supporters, my fiance, and all my students that believe in me. Continue to keep our place running, and it's just, life is good, man. Life is good.
Now, how about favorite fighters? Do you have anybody that all-time favorite or, you know, somebody that you have to watch whenever they fight now?
Oh, you know what, man? I really like Olivia. There's a few fighters, you know, top list fighters, you know. One of my favorites was BJ Penn, you know, when he was in his prime. And I had got the opportunity once to train with him, and that was an awesome experience. And I would say BJ Penn, you know who I like right now also is Jose Aldo and Frankie Edgar. I'd say my two top favorite fighters right now that are out, you know, that are currently competing in the UFC.
Yeah, Jose, I don't know, he's having a little bit of difficulty lately. He might not be in the UFC too much longer if he's...
You're right.
More peaceful.
But in his prime, you know, the things that he's done, you know, and you got to respect, you know. Just like his opponent coming up, you know, Conor McGregor, you know, you got to respect, you know, the man and what he's done for the sport, you know. He's a great competitor and he's done a great job for the promotion.
Yeah, I really think he's going to do well against Conor McGregor, but it's unfortunate we didn't get to see that right away. We'll have to wait.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's... pretty dangerous what the UFC is doing with him, because if he leaves, you know, that's going to be influential to a lot of other fighters. And, you know, if one of the titleists takes off because of politics and bullshit, that's going to be a pretty big story. But it sounds like, you know, with all the stuff that they put him through, getting their own doctor to say his rib wasn't broken, that was pretty bad.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I hadn't been following that too closely, but, wow, yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's pretty sketchy, we'll say.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's one thing you got to watch out for if you sign with them, you know. Actually, Ryan Couture told me once when I interviewed him out in Vegas that his dad advised him not to sign with the UFC because they like to keep you under their thumb. And that's quite a true statement looking back, 2020 vision, you know, hindsight. But anyway, anybody you want to give a shout out to or thank before we let you go?
Yeah, I got a few sponsors. First thing, my management team, Meridian Sports Agency, Jason House, and Early Moses Whittington. Sponsors, I think, Cynthia Fighter for the Super Bag, Core Coaster from Core Prodigy, Armor Gel, Nutrition Edge, Cage Fighter, Venom, and of course Nutrition, Nutrition Bars, Protein Bars. And that's about it for now. Thank you, Rich, for having me on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Taking the time out.
We always like the guests to thank us, you know. It's very important. Anyway, how about where do people find you out there online?
Online, you can find me at on Twitter at Executioner155 and on Instagram at Executioner155. And you can follow me on Facebook at Alexander Reyes. You can find my fighter page. Go and give me a like, give me a follow. I'll keep you guys updated on my upcoming fight events coming up.
And just to let everybody know who's listening, don't confuse him with the other Alex Reyes on Sherdog because he doesn't have the record.
Oh, yeah, man. There's tons of Alex Reyes out there.
Yeah.
But
even the other guy even has a picture on Sherdog. He's like 1-2 or something.
Yeah. There's quite a few out there, man. Even wrestling group in high school, there's a couple of the Alex Reyes in terms of bumping into each other. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, actually, I think I know an Alex Reyes who I used to box with.
Yeah. What do you call me? It's actually Alexander, but I go by Alex for short. So she looks me up on Facebook or stuff like that. It's always Alexander.
All right. Well, do you have any final thoughts before we let you go?
No, man, that's about it. Just, you know, thanks again for having me on the show. You guys stay tuned. Follow Chain the Cage. My next fight, August 29th, is Citizens Bank Arena in Ontario, California. While I go out there and capture my third belt, be the first ever in organization history to hold three belts at one time. Pretty excited to get that done. So,
awesome.
Tune in, give me a follow.
We'll definitely keep an eye on you and be following your career. And can't wait to see you in the UFC. And
good luck, Alex.
Thing, that's going to be the ticket.
Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, that's Alex Reyes. And he's got that big fight coming up, August 29th, I think he said. And I'm going to have to look up for that. It's a kind of a different mix here. We got a guest, Willie, who's he's got a fight almost a month after his last fight. And then Alex hasn't fought since March. March was his last fight on Sherdog anyway, so. He's waiting until August for his next fight, taking his time. But, you know, it's that, maybe it's that oversaturation thing we were talking about, Tom. I throw my spike cards. I got to throw people out there every 15 minutes. anyway, I think that's about all the stories I have for this week, and I don't think I've forgot any events, upcoming or past. I don't think we got the best listing schedule of results here from BoxRec.
BoxRec sucks.
Right. Well, we'll have to, I guess, wait till next week. And big fight's coming up then, too. We've got Ronda Rousey's next fight, of course, August 1st against Betch Kohea. Can't really wait for that one. And actually, that's another news story I forgot to mention. Cyborg is going to be there at UFC 190, specifically to heckle Rousey, she says. Well, that'll be interesting. I'm sure.
Well, she better do it quick because Ronda Rousey's last fight got 14 seconds.
Yeah. She's going to have to do all the heckling on the walkout.
Yeah, right.
Good point, Tony. This is when you think Tony's
right.
In MMA. You know, you bring something up like that.
That's right.
Surprises. Okay, I guess we're going to end it a little bit early tonight. Thanks, everybody, for stopping by. Thanks again for Willie and Alex. Great interviews. I didn't think we could get as much in 15 minutes, but it worked out pretty well.
Perfect. Yeah. All right, guys. Good weekend of fights. Let's enjoy them.
And we'll...
All right. Have a wonderful evening, and hasta la vista, baby.
Yes, sir. We'll have boxing next week for sure for guests. Boxing guests.
All right. See you later.
Night, folks.